Welcome to The Perfect Storm, a podcast for business executives and cybersecurity professionals. Industry veterans Michael Markulek and Matthew Webster chat with guests about the latest cyber news, threats, and trends, and how all of it impacts their businesses. Harbor Technology Group is a cybersecurity consulting firm that offers advisory services to the SMB. Harbor believes by taking a proactive rather than reactive approach to cybersecurity, business leaders can develop a cybersecurity program that will address external requirements, exceed client expectations, and ultimately take their organization to the next level. Harbor's innovative processes are based on industry standard frameworks that are tailored to meet the needs of small and medium-sized businesses.
Welcome to another episode of The Perfect Storm. I'm pleased today to be joined by the CEO of Zip Security, Josh Zweig. Josh and Zip Security are doing some interesting things on the small and medium-sized business front, really helping businesses kind of attack the threat that's out there and doing it in a unique way where a lot of the heavy lifting, a lot of the technical expertise does not have to sit inside your organization. So Josh, welcome, and why don't you take a few minutes and kind of, you know, tell us about your business and how you got here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michael. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat with you and the group for a little while. From Zip Security a few years ago. And yeah, happy to share a little bit about what we're working on and how we got started. So a lot of folks that I worked with, we worked at Palantir together and then left and started the company here. And we had done cybersecurity, you name it. Big companies, small companies, startups, government, all that kind of stuff. And I'd say one of the problems that we saw very consistently, I think there's generally like two big problems in security that people have to solve. One is this sort of strategy problem, what should we be doing in the first place? And then two is, okay, great, now we know what we should be doing and how do we go out there and execute it? Both problems are really hard. And what we basically decided to do is say, hey, let's focus on a set of companies where the strategies should basically always be the same and then try to reduce the complexity and the cost of the technical execution as much as possible. Our goal is to do it by four or five orders of magnitude. So that's kind of how we got started. So we work with a lot of, I'd say, pretty modern companies, tech startups, you name it, that kind of thing, who, you know, they have kind of pretty similar infrastructure. Everyone's on Google Workspace or Entra ID, you know, there's no servers in the closet. The most common reason people end up coming to us is, oh, my customer's making me do security. And you know, you get all these like old school questionnaires. Oh, tell me about your kind of VPN setup. And it's like, I don't know, this guy just like has a MacBook and goes into Slack in the cloud. Like, what's a VPN getting for you? So that's like a lot of our customer base. And yeah, the goal of what we're doing is just to make it as easy as possible to actually implement the technical controls necessary and try to take as much of the expertise out of it. So a classic customer for us is, oh, hey, well, we got hacked a year ago and we haven't done anything about it because the MSPs of the world are a little too expensive for us and we're looking for a way to kind of get secure, but in a way that's a little more affordable and a little lighter lift. And that's kind of where we come in, being able to start building a nice business.
So not to go too far into the technology, but give us a little of the technology stack, endpoint protection, mobile device management, integration with a SIM or log management. You know, where do you fit in that kind of technology landscape?
So we're trying to go pretty horizontal across the top. So when it comes to EDR, when it comes to MDM, do we care if it's Jamf? You know, we don't really care. You know, our goal is not really to pick winners there. Obviously, we do partner with a few companies that we think have great technology. But the way we think about it, and CrowdStrike actually published a great study on this like last year. And basically what they said is, for every dollar people are spending on CrowdStrike, they're spending $7 on getting it set up and deployed and configured and managed. And we're really going after that $7. And you know, where we started was with two pieces at the same time, identity and endpoints. And the reason we started that way is because we thought, hey, if we start with those, we'll kind of have the wedges we need in order to do everything else really well. So let me give you an example. From there, we went into EDR, right? So we'll help people deploy and manage CrowdStrike. Well, what are the tools you need to automate away, let's say, CrowdStrike deployment? Well, ideally, you have access to the identity system, so you know whose devices they are, and the device management tools, so you can actually do the distribution and CrowdStrike itself, of course. And we sort of continue to follow that and say, as we continue to build out and touch these different endpoints, whether it's email security, identity security, partnership with Google on like Chrome browser security. We try to say, hey, what's the order that we should go in that gives us a structural advantage to make it easier and easier for our customers to access these technologies because we're deeply enough embedded in all the adjacent ones that are needed to like deploy and manage it and orchestrate the systems.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that we see, and again, we see the same thing. A lot of small and medium-sized businesses are seeing a lot of outside pressure for security, right? Whether it's CMMC dealing with the government, if you're a tech company, if you're hosting an app, folks want to see a SOC 2. So we're seeing this pressure on the small and medium-sized businesses. And you're right, they don't have typical infrastructure. They typically don't have an internal IT team. Right. And they certainly don't have a chief information security officer. So they face a unique set of challenges. And then you add on the threat landscape, the new pressures with AI, the complexity of deploying cyber solutions. So I think anything we can do to ease their burden, to make it more business friendly and less tech friendly, goes a long way. So I don't know what you're seeing as you talk to your clients, but again, we're seeing this pressure on the small and medium sized business, and they really don't know where to go. They're throwing up their hands.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think there's a lot of places in which our industry hasn't necessarily done this group any favors, right? Anytime I go on the CrowdStrike website and I see all like the scary robots and this kind of thing, right? There is sort of a opacity to cybersecurity, right? I don't think in general we're out there as an industry trying to make it as accessible as possible to as many people as possible and have, you know, generally kept it in the realm of experts for some legitimate reason, certainly. But I think what the drum I beat to our team is, we want to make cybersecurity accessible because there is a set of customers and a set of businesses and a set of problems where we can really reduce the complexity a lot, especially in security. Complexity ends up oftentimes being the enemy of security. And we definitely don't like to let perfect be the enemy of the good. And let's try to start simple, accessible, straightforward. And in 90% of cases, we can get people 90% of the way there. And, you know, I can't tell you how many security theater conversations I've been in where it's like, you know, the sort of whataboutism. Okay, that's all good that you guys are doing that, but what about this? If that happens, what about if this happens? Like, yeah, okay, like, why don't we do the basics? Why don't we get 90% of the way there and then have that conversation? And that's sort of our approach. And we've been, you know, pretty effective at helping people get the first 90% of the way there. And it's funny, people normally forget about the second 90%, you know, by the time you finish the first idea. But, you know, that's really what we're focused on. I think we can do a lot of good and help people out a lot if we can just stay laser focused on that. Because businesses do legitimately, hey, that last 10% could be unique, you know, to companies. It's something we might
could
not
be unique to the company, could be unique to the threat landscape they see, could be unique to the compliance that they've got to deal with, right? And I tell people all the time that Bank of America and Hopewell Valley Community Bank basically have the same security requirements. They have the same regulatory requirements. The difference is Bank of America's got almost unlimited resources they can throw at the problem. Hopewell Valley Community Bank doesn't have that.
So right, the first eight things on the list that they should both do are kind of the same.
Right, and it's funny, you know, and again, you know, not to date myself in these conversations, but if you go back 20, 25 years ago, we weren't talking cybersecurity. We were talking good basic networking. And I was dealing with government contractors at the time. I was dealing with the Department of Defense. And we didn't use the word cyber or information security. What we really talked about was good networking. Let's understand our access control. Let's protect our endpoints. Let's make sure we know where our critical assets are and how we're managing them. And that's the basics of getting back to good blocking and tackling.
Well, I think that's a really interesting thing about this world where we try to bridge the gap. And to be honest, it's sometimes very difficult, but I think is in general causes a lot of issues is like, well, yeah, for security, what are the best things you could be doing? The sort of blocking, tackling, and crushing the kind of IT basics. And, you know, it's interesting too, right? We see a lot of people, maybe they have an MSP and an MSSP, or maybe there's an MSP and they're not really qualified on security and this kind of thing. And there ends up being this disconnect, which we kind of try to bridge the gap and solve both at the same time. They're like, well, actually, if you crush the sort of IT basics, that is the biggest head start you can give yourself on your kind of security journey. But, you know, ends up very commonly being easier said than done. But it is interesting. I know you mentioned you talked about some of the AI security things too, but they're not barred from the same conversation we're having right now, which is like, everyone has to focus on the same 8 or 10 things. Even, you know, one of the big banks just they published their like, oh, in a post-Mythos world, what do you need to be focusing on in cybersecurity? And you look at the list, oh, lo and behold, it's the same 8 things, right? You know, that we're saying everybody kind of has to do. And that stuff is still so out of reach for so many companies.
Well, it's funny. You go back to what used to be the SANS Top 20, now the, you know, Center for Internet Security Controls. You know, they're basic. Protect your endpoint, train your employees, identity management, vulnerability scanning, patching. all those kind of basic things that most businesses think about the big problem, not the small, and certainly that fits. To pivot a little bit, let's talk about what you're seeing in the threat landscape. What are small and medium-sized business owners really need to be worried about? I tell them all the time, the Russians are not coming to attack them. But whether it's business email compromise or ransomware, you know, what are you seeing as you talk to your clients? What are they afraid of? What are they really trying to protect themselves against?
Yeah, there's a few things here. One place that's worth starting and has an interesting nexus to AI is on the classic fraudulent transfers of funds and business email compromise. I'd say, especially at the start of this year and late last year too, our phone was just kind of ringing off the hook with the situation's basically this. I know so-and-so, they're a lawyer, they were negotiating a settlement with this other lawyer. The other lawyer shared the ACH information for the settlement transfer. They sent the wire and it never got there, right? Oh, and actually what happened? Well, you know, some bad actor got initial access to their email, was just hanging out on the thread until it was time to send ACH and wire information across. And what is this? This isn't something you can do by your own cybersecurity, right? You could have best practices about, hey, we always call over a trusted method to like verify the wire details, right? Which is absolutely what you should do. But it's interesting because in a world where the initial access is not that expensive and now people have LLMs and can like do this sort of monitoring at scale, this is something we see definitely going on. So that's one, I guess, a new spin on an old thing, perhaps, that continues to happen. So that's one of the most common ones we see where you can do some very, that's like right to me at the nexus of where like it's easy to solve with process. You don't need any fancy technology and it's right where the money lives too, right? It's just confirm over that second factor. That's one thing we've been seeing a lot of. And then there's definitely a lot of, say, increased targeted attacks with some of like the geopolitical conflicts we see going on, both targeted and non-targeted. And obviously there is the situation with Stryker, right? There's a lot of this. And I do think some people in the security world, they're like, oh, you know, I'm not a target. And that's generally wrong because even if you don't feel like you have anything worth stealing, well, maybe you have relationships with people that are worth breaking into. But the other thing is like, it's not just about whether or not you're a target. There is this like baseline of risk. There's like being a company that uses the internet where you don't have to be a target. And there are many attacks that aren't targeted. We saw someone joined a company and downloaded some productivity software on the first day, but only that company's productivity software's Google Ads account had been hacked. Malware was uploaded and then they downloaded it. They thought they were using the app, but they were also using, you know, had downloaded and were running some malware, right? So there's all these sort of like basic things that, again, you don't have to be a target for that people sometimes forget. I think the psychology of people who think about security or are like making a first security investment is oftentimes like very interesting and not always rational.
It's funny. You brought up an interesting point here that I talk about quite a bit, which is risk management. And I'll use the example. If I owned a chain of dry cleaners, you know, there's certain things I got to protect. My point of sale system, make sure that, you know, my operations continue running. But my risk tolerance is pretty high. Right. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on information security and complex systems because the actual monetary risk is low if I get hit. On the other hand, if I'm a registered investment advisor and I've got to book a high net worth individual clients, now, you know, I've got reputational risk, I've got financial risk, I've got risk from lawsuits if I don't do anything properly, and I've got regulations coming in from, you know, state and federal government. In that case, you know, my risk tolerance is much lower. And therefore, my strategy, my deployment, my activities have got to be quite different. So, you know, one of the nice things that we do, and I'm sure, you know, talking to you and your team, is help organizations gauge that level of risk so that they're addressing it properly. The Fort Knox standard doesn't apply to everybody. And it shouldn't. Too often as security professionals, we're like, lock it down, 100%. You got to do everything. As you said, if you do 90% of it well, you're probably a lot better than the rest of the world.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's one of the biggest opportunities. And this is kind of what I meant when I put it very well. When I think about, oh, areas we haven't done a great service making this stuff accessible, I think there's not enough of exactly what you're describing in the industry of exactly this. People who are comfortable saying, here's a risk, we should be comfortable accepting it. And that's that. And there's not nearly enough of that out there. And too many of the conversations as a result devolve into these what about isms and what ifs and what ifs and what ifs, when it ends up very much being the enemy of progress and getting the kind of basic controls in place that people need to protect themselves minimally. And then, you know, you can make your own risk-based decisions about how far you want to go from there.
Right. And it does become that there's only so many things you can do at risk, right? Mitigate, right. Transfer, accept. So too often we try and mitigate every risk that's out there. We right. hear about a bad thing, or the CEO sits at a conference and hears about, you know, a bad thing that happened to a colleague and runs back and all of a sudden it's got to mitigate it, got to buy a piece of technology, got to put something in. When the thought process isn't there about how big is that risk, what is it really going to mean to us, and are there other ways to deal with it?
Or non-technical controls, right? Very commonly, the only, you know, tool we feel like we have is technical controls, which can be expensive and hard to implement. But in our, you know, fraudulent transfer of funds example, there's an easy, how about process, right? And how about have some two-step
financial process? Again, this is a technology kind of thing. You know, I think of things like a stop sign. I mean, that's a control, right? There's no physical barrier there. There's nothing that makes you stop. There's no technology. That's just policy. Good policy and training has taught us that we stop at stop sign. Too often we ignore those kind of solutions in a grand cyber strategy. Not saying that everything is just going to be solved with policy. You do need technology. You do need process. But, you know, too often we're just looking at throwing technology at a problem. And I think your approach to understanding your clients and understanding where they sit really goes far to helping them solve that. Give you a couple of minutes to kind of close up. Anything else that we, you know, you want to cover? Any news you guys have? Anything exciting coming out?
We've signed a couple of interesting customers recently, but, you know, it's one of the interesting things about the security industry, right? It's we never feel so good telling our customers we want to go advertise with them, although many of them have been generous to do it.
It's funny. I've got clients. I got a distillery as a client. I have a client that makes pieces to satellites. So the commonality for us is they're all small and medium-sized businesses that are struggling with these issues.
We're exactly the same, right? It's like we have people that do solar panels, and we have people that make cartoons, and we have people that make semiconductors. Like, you know, it's the whole gamut. Yeah, I'm curious, is for your guys' base, is most of what you see, you know, people are getting pressure from their big customers to kind of shore up their security?
Yeah, there's the outside threat and the fear of the outside threat. But most of what we're seeing is on the compliance side, whether that be meeting the requirements of their clients, or meeting CMMC, meeting the requirements of the government, or we see a lot of fintech, biotech kind of companies headed down the SOC 2 route, right? So they can get rid of that whole filling out 57 questionnaires every time they've got to go through a deal to just say, here's my SOC 2, you know, go read it.
That's another interesting can of worms. We were at an event the other day, and security leader at the kind of customer that's generally pretty influential here, you think like Fortune 10, he goes, oh yeah, the SOC 2s are basically coming out of Cracker Jack boxes these days, which I thought was a great.
Yeah, there was a case where a couple of CPAs put up a website, started to sell SOC 2s, were using AI, LLMs to generate them and not really doing it. But they were found out, they were caught, and they've gone off to jail. So, yeah, there are some folks out there that do that. It's no different than getting a fake driver's license, right? You know, there's always people looking for the easy, cheap way out.
Yeah, I'm curious. The whole third-party risk thing, I think, is really interesting, too. It's something where we've been getting pretty involved. There's a big problem, I think, too. I'll tell you a quick story from a customer we signed. You're talking to someone, you know, they clicked on an ad for us during the discovery call. They're telling us about how one of their customers is making them do security. Like, okay, great. And then we didn't hear from them for 2 weeks. And I was like, oh man, I bet they got through the audit and they felt like they didn't need us. We'll never hear from them again. And then they resurface and they're like, oof, okay, we got through the you know, due diligence. Now we actually have to go implement all the things we said. Yeah, you know, we said we have, right? And the level of diligence here, I think, is like really variable. And I think it's going to change here and like get a lot more automated and evidence-based just because like the problem hasn't gotten better. That's the thing I always say about security. You know, that's tough. Security is, for the last, 20, 30 years, we spend more and more on security every year, about like 10 or 15%, and the problem's only ever gotten worse.
Not to take a shot at government, but that doesn't that sound like government or public education, right? We spend more and the problem gets bigger, not smaller. I think in our case, though, it's really two things. One is the monetization of the threat. There's no bad actors that want to deface a website so they can get their name in the newspaper. There are no more Kevin Mitnicks, you know, that kind of, you know, let's break in to see if we can break in. People are breaking in because they want money. And that's, you know, so it's really become a business on that side. And if you believe the FBI or the international numbers, right, somewhere between a $5 and $15 billion annual worldwide business is what cybercrime is. So number one, the monetization has really affected things. And I also think that we've done ourselves a disservice with technology. Not to say making technology easier is bad, but we've made it to the point where executives, because they can turn on their laptop, think that they understand information security or network management. And, you know, it's a fallacy. And it's even, you know, go look at business schools, right? I'm a Duke grad. I think you're a Columbia grad, undergrad, right? Go look at the big business schools. None of them are teaching anything about technology. And yet technology is one of the biggest spends and one of the biggest productivity gains that any business has. So I don't think we spend enough real time at the C-suite talking about it.
I think we're getting closer to the solutions there, hopefully, sure. I definitely agree.
Oh, you know, and it comes down, you know, and I poked fun at government earlier. I mean, you look at who's making decisions about information security. You know, look at our, you know, our congressmen, our senators, and even their staffs, right? There's not many of them in their 30s or 40s.
You know? That's definitely the case.
And if you got folks in their 60s and 70s who, you know, who can't log on yet, let alone interact with ChatGPT, how can they be making good policy?
And I think there's, especially for these customers, I think there's problems like up and down the stack, right? Because at the highest level, it's very difficult to align on like what strategic good looks like. What does our sort of risk register look like? What have we transferred? What have we accepted? What have we mitigated? You know, even deciding at that level is hard. The strategies for getting from where you are to those goals, it's hard to ask the questions. Below that, actually just like knowing the questions to ask to piece together, I think this is one of the really difficult things about security is like, okay, if we have some risk around identity compromise or something, man, how many places do we need to look and how many questions do we need to be able to ask in order to even have a good understanding of the risk and how all these things compose together? And then below that, how do we actually report on the data in a way we're really confident with? And I think composing all of those things at the same time is incredibly difficult and is part of what makes the security problem so hard. Even aligning on the questions and having the mechanics to answer them, and it's too tough for too many.
I think it is. So I'll take a step back and maybe push back on that a little bit, because we do it with finances. We manage finance down to the penny. We know how to manage financial risk. We know how to manage operational risk. I started my career early as a plant engineer when I got out of the Army in a manufacturing facility. You know, we knew about operational risk, what it cost when a machine went down. We managed the KPIs. As I sit and ask CEOs and small business owners, you know, how do you manage your IT staff? How do you manage your MSP? What are their KPIs? You know, how do you hold them accountable? I get blank stares. They can manage down to a penny on a financial spreadsheet, but they can't even give good KPIs to their internal IT team. Some of it is a leadership will to do it.
I couldn't agree more. That's the problem, right? And we see this with MSPs. What are the questions you should be asking to hold people accountable? And then how can you verify them? I think there's a big weakness here. Why do you think that is? Do you think, is this just like not connected to the bottom line in dollars and cents yet for everybody in a right way?
But it is. We're spending more, as you just said, we're spending more and more on technology. We rely on it for productivity. We would never consider allowing a new hire to operate a piece of machinery in a manufacturing facility without proper training. But yet we're going to give them a $5,000 laptop that has access to the entirety of human knowledge via the web and never train them on how to do their job, never train them on what the expectations are. The guy on the machine floor knows you don't put your hand in the machine while it's running. We don't have that same kind of training, that same kind of attitude towards technology, and it baffles me.
Part of the reason why is it's much less measurable. You know, you can see and feel the machine. Finances, right? You can add these things. Getting an authoritative report from your MSP on which of your devices have checked into Intune in the last 30 days, you can't do it, you know?
But you just got to ask him for it. You got to demand it. Yeah. And it's good risk management. It's good leadership. And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, we really go out and try and promote is that, look, you want help? I'll give you a list of questions you should ask your MSP. You haven't met with your MSP in 6 months? Yeah, it's a little crazy, but we can go on and on. Josh, I'd like to get you back because I'd like to have another discussion around what we just went into, which is that whole, why don't we do this, right? How can, you know, where the shortcomings are, and we could spend another 20, 30 minutes talking about that.
That would be great.
But we'll get you back on a future episode. Like with all our guests, and we set it up ahead of time for you, we ask all of our guests to provide a harbor or a beach location or a resort, somewhere where you like to sit and watch the sun go down, where you can have a, you know, a good burger, a cold beer. So where is your getaway? Where's your harbor?
Yeah, you know, I had to cheat a little bit because I'm more of a inland, you know, mountain kind of guy. But one of my colleagues reminded me I had a lot of fun having a lobster roll on the pier in Portland, Maine. So I'll have to give a plug for that. That's a good way to spend a summer afternoon.
That's a great way. A Maine Brewing Company and, you know, getting nice cold beer. That's certainly a way to go. Again, thank you for your time. We'll certainly get you back
with
this conversation and look forward to working with you and your team as we kind of continue this partnership.
Yeah, same here. Thank you so much, Michael.
Harbor's innovative processes are based on industry standard frameworks that are tailored to meet the needs of small and medium-sized businesses. We would also like to thank Tom Marshall for the original music. Yes, that Tom Marshall from Fish fame. Harbor's portfolio of services is designed to meet the cybersecurity needs of small and medium enterprises. We offer a range of services from cyber risk advisory to VCSO consulting to meet specific security requirements without putting a strain on your technology budget. If you like what you heard here, be sure to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. We release new podcasts and are available on Spotify and Apple. You can reach us through our website if you have additional questions or suggest a great harbor we should mention on our next show.